What if I told you there's a place I can show you where you can confront the darkest of your nightmares? It's a place you can leave at any time you wish with just the push of a button. But rest assured, you will never forget your time at the Nightmare Bazaar.
I wish you'd give it up, Billy. I'm tired of this every year now.
Billy's mom, Merla, is fed up because most of the neighborhood kids, and all her friends' kids, seem to have no problem still believing in Santa Claus at 10 years old. But not Billy. Since just after he turned 7 back in 95, the boy has been insisting that Santa Claus, or Santa Claus, as Billy calls him, wakes him up on Christmas Eve late in the night and tries to get him to go along to the North Pole. Something most kids would probably be excited about, but not Billy. He told his mother that Santa wasn't trying to get him to go for a fun trip to the North Pole, where they'd take a tour through the workshop to see the elves and maybe pop in to see Mrs. Claus baking cookies and all manners of treats, and then maybe even a look into the reindeer stable. He claimed that Santa was threatening to take him away to the place where the bad kids go. The first time Billy told his mother about the bad place, she was horrified by all the strange, disturbing things her son said. Things his mother assumed were only known to those men in the Middle Ages who conducted agonizing torture on the bodies of others in some deep, dark dungeon in the bowels of a castle. She keeps trying to tell Billy that his imagination is too active, that he's fixated on wild stories that can't possibly be true. She figures this all came about because he probably started sneaking around late at night catching horror movies he shouldn't be watching on Showcase. It isn't enough to convince Billy of what he insists has been happening these past couple years, no matter what Marla thinks up for herself. Even worse, Billy tells his mother that Santa's actually a terrible, old, ragged creature covered in hair with long, skinny arms at the end of which are scaly paws that each bear several sharp talons. He says Santa comes into the room slithering across the floor before pulling the blankets away and running those talons over Billy's bare skin beneath the pajamas. Just last year in 97, Billy woke his mother up in the middle of the night after Santa had supposedly been by for a visit. He was quiet and withdrawn, but still showed Marla all the scratches on his chest and stomach. The scratches, he said, were left by Santa's talons. That's when Marla decided it was best to take her son to see a doctor. Not to mend the scratches, which she did with a little rubbing alcohol and some aloe vera cream, but to try and mend whatever was going on in little Billy's head, to make him imagine Santa as some kind of awful creature. And the psychologist, despite being a well-meaning and sweet woman, was of no use in the end either. Billy's still terrified of Christmas Eve night. He keeps asking if he and Marla can go to a hotel for the night so that maybe Santa won't be able to find them. And even if Marla could afford to get them a hotel room for just a night, she likely wouldn't. She doesn't want to give in any further to her son's delusions than she has already. After the first year, she tried not talking about Santa much the following Christmas. She stuck to talking about the holidays, Christmas morning, and family get-togethers, and she decided not to ask Billy to write his yearly letter to old Saint Nick. Next year, Marla waited until Christmas Eve to put up the tree and all the decorations, keeping Billy up late until he was ready to pass out for a nice, calm sleep. And it didn't work. Last year, the year of the scratches, Marla planned on not putting the tree up until Christmas Day, but then she didn't even bother after seeing her boy's little body all marked and red and smeared with tiny trickles of blood. She doesn't know what this year will bring come tomorrow night, but she knows that even if she springs for a hotel room, she'll get an early wake-up call that'll haunt her for a whole other 365 days until next Christmas. She'd rather just stay at home and deal with the inevitable trauma in a place of comfort instead of being stuck in a hotel. After Marla puts Billy to bed on Tibbs Eve, she sits in her old rocking chair, the one her father used to sit in for years and years before the cancer took him, and drinks Captain Morgan from a tumbler full of ice until the ice and the rum or only a slight layer of slush at the bottom of the glass. She wants her little boy to be a happy, carefree child. She wants to decorate the tree with him, to make Christmas cookies in the shapes of trees and reindeer, sing carols, to open up one special present on Christmas Eve in anticipation of the rest of the presents to come in the morning. She wants all that for him. Marlo wants Billy to have the magical Christmas that she never got to have because her own dad was too busy working himself to death constantly to pay bills and a mortgage and feed the child he was left with after her mom left them. And as hard as she works, she's still incapable of giving Billy a wonderful Merry Christmas, because some strange idea worked its way into her son's brain and grew into what she can now only consider madness. When Marla finishes her last drink and stumbles to bed, checking on Billy along the way, she flops into the sheets and dreams about the Christmases she and Billy used to have when he was a baby. She longs for those days. She's barely asleep long enough to actually fall into a dream when she has a nightmare about Billy's Santa creature crawling along the floor until it reaches her bed and gives her belly a little tickle. It takes her hours to get back to sleep. As Christmas Eve dinner winds down, Marla looks across the dinner table filled with her big extended family. Usually there's 20 or more at her Aunt Alvina's place any given year, and sees Billy with a face full of despair that seems to be sucking the life from his body. She thinks to herself how her son resembles one of those little toys that collapses into a mess of disjointed limbs when you press a button on the bottom, scared that somebody might accidentally brush up against him and he'll fall to pieces right there in the dining room. She tries not to let her worry show, and she smiles when her relatives look at her, and she lifts a drink to pretend she's listening when she sees everybody else lift theirs. Deep inside, Marla's gut rots with terror about what tonight is about to bring into her life. She hopes that Billy won't go any further than to scratch his body, that his delusion won't cause any worse violence to him. She'd rather her boy have vivid nightmares instead of walking into some new unknowable horror carved into his flesh, or something she's not even equipped to begin imagining. Marla spirals inside from the lack of control. Soon, Simonize on the stereo, and Aunt Alvina's got Uncle Terry up for a jig, and everybody's having a time while they have a few Christmas drinks. Marla just keeps on staring at Billy in the dark cloud all but stuck to his skin. At home, Marla tells Billy they're going to go for a long drive in a little while and look at some lights.
You know, you can still put up the Christmas tree, Mom.
Marla looks at her son and almost tears up. She stops herself. She smiles at the boy and squeezes him on the chin gently. She's about to say, "I love you," when he opens his mouth again.
"The Santa will still come even if you don't put it up."
This sentence made Marla want to throw up. Even though she doesn't believe in some hideous Santa creature that her son believes is visiting them every year at Christmas time, she's disturbed and sickened by the way her son speaks the words. It makes her skin want to crawl right off the bone. At the same time, she decides that Billy's right. No matter what she does, it's apparent that Santa will be coming, whatever that means for her son this year. So she pulls out the tree, all the decorations, and then she gets Billy to help her start putting everything up too. After a couple hours, Marla and Billy's home looks festive. It feels more like Halloween to Marla, as she can't help anticipating what's to come late in the night after she falls asleep, and Billy conjures up his monstrous Santa in his head. The place is bright and glistening. The whole house is perfumed with a beautiful scent wafting out of the kitchen, where Marla has cinnamon sticks with dried fruit peels simmering in a pot on the stove. Cookies are in the oven, nearly finished baking. And still, it can't quell Marla's worries. She's stomach sick thinking of what could possibly occur at bedtime in an hour or two. It's already 11 o'clock. Billy's starting to nod off a bit while he sits at the base of the Christmas tree and puts a few finishing touches on the decorations. His little head slumps every now and then until he quickly picks it back up and wipes his eyes, pretending he never dozed off briefly. The time is almost here, and the fear curdles inside Marla until she feels bloated. As Marla puts Billy to bed and tucks him in, she looks at him with a desperate sadness, and he notices.
Mom, you shouldn't worry so much. Oh, honey, I can't help it. You tried your best.
The words make Marla tear up, and she can't hold them back, only enough so that they don't actually spill over her cheeks. She sits on her son's bed looking at him with big, wet eyes.
We'll still try to have a nice Christmas, baby, okay?
Billy doesn't say anything, but he tries to smile. He, too, is worried about what's coming tonight. Because as much as Marla wants to believe that her son's telling tall tales produced from a delusional fold lurking somewhere in his brain matter, Billy knows that the Santa visiting him these past few years is all too real. The boy wishes he had the intelligence to convincingly explain to his mother what was happening. He's only 10 years old, and if he lives to 150, he'll still not have the vocabulary to perfectly describe the ghastly reality he's been facing down every single Christmas Eve night since Christmas of 95. All Billy can do is smile, receive his mom's goodnight kisses on the forehead, and close his eyes tightly. He tries to hang on to the airy, flowery scent of his mother's perfume lingering in the warm air of his bedroom, while his mom turns off the light and closes the door, as she leaves it open a sliver to shine a little light in from the hallway. In minutes, the bedroom air is stale and ancient, and it chokes Billy. And then, darkness. When Marla opens her eyes, it's still dark. Not a creature was stirring. Neither was Billy. Silence. Though only for a moment or two. From the pitch black comes a sound that Marla can't quite register at first. It only sounds like a moan to Marla, but even then startles her. The thin hairs on Marla's arm and neck stand up like porcupine quills. She knows the sound didn't come from Billy. Whoever made it, or whatever, doesn't really matter. It only matters to Marla that someone else is inside their home. If Marla lives to see 1,000 Christmases, she'll never be able to imagine the kind of horror that she witnesses when she creeps her way down the hall and peeks into her son's room. The first thing Marla spies is a long, ragged piece of red material, old and worn felt, dragging across the floor. Just looking at it, Marla could almost smell it. The felt, which she quickly realized was actually a stocking, reeked of piss, cigarette smoke, and pine needles. Then she sees what's dragging the ugly stocking, and it's exactly how Billy described it. A hideous creature full of fur and scaly skin, with long arms bearing disgusting talons, and is dressed in a Santa outfit that looks like a mall Santa tossed into a dumpster years ago. Marla wants to gasp, but is afraid to let out a sound. It sees you when you're sleeping, but it certainly knows when you're awake. But the aging floorboards of Marla's house give her away with a groaning squeak as she barely shifts her weight from one foot to the next. The Santa thing turns from Billy, who's luckily still asleep, though now covered in fresh new scratches. It looks right at Marla and she freezes in its gaze. That's when Marla's able to get a good look at it, or rather, at him. This Santa's no creature. It isn't some mortifying monster come to life, like Billy said. It's an old man. His beard is long and dirty like a twist of electrical wiring, and his nails are frighteningly long. turned yellow and black from years upon years of neglect.
Nein! Verschwind!
The old man yells at Marla, but she can't pick out the words.
Ostigen! Ostigen!
Before Marla can do anything, she's rushed by the awful Santa, and he's fast on top of her, knocking her to the floor. She struggles as he tries to pin her arms to the floor. Marla gives the old Santa a knee in the groin, which sends him rolling in a painful spin to the other side of the room. She gets up and grabs Billy, who's finally just woken up to the chaos in his room late on Christmas Eve. Marla says nothing and pulls Billy from the room, just as Nasty Santa picks himself up and starts to shamble after them. Marla shoves Billy in front of her and barks at him to run next door, to call the police, to let somebody know what's happening to them. And just when Billy goes running off downstairs towards the front door, Santa grabs Marla by the hair and pulls her to the floor again. As Marla turns to look at the wretched Saint Nick, she sees a glint of metal. The Christmas lights in her dark hallway sparkle in the knife's blade as Santa holds it into the air, intending to sink it down into Marla's flesh somewhere, anywhere. Before Santa drops the blade like a guillotine towards Marla, she frees a leg from under him and plants the heel of her foot hard into his sternum. Not only does the air go out of Santa's chest, his body goes tumbling backwards. Santa falls over the first handful of stairs, then his head cracks off part of the railing, and his body drops to the landing right before the final few steps towards the living room. And as his old, frail frame shatters like glass on the landing, his hand, wildly searching for safe and solid ground, accidentally swings the knife it's still grasping, which sinks easily into the soft flesh around his wrinkled throat. When all's said and done, Marla stands silent at the top of the stairs, her shocked face lit only by the glow of Christmas decorations in the upstairs hallway. She looks down at the bloody mess and the aftermath of Santa Claus's visit this year. She notices something strange, though. A brown shirt poking out through the now ripped Santa outfit, some badges pinned to the breast, and the faint sight of a red armband over the brown shirt on the man's left arm. She doesn't think much of it because she only wants to hug Billy. A wave of shame washes over Marla for not believing her son, but she tries to assure herself that most mothers would have reacted the same way. She's just glad that Billy survived meeting Santa Claus this year. In the following days, Marla discovers that the horrific Santa who came to visit Billy at night the past few Christmases was an old German man who'd succumbed to dementia after being abandoned by his grandchildren in the early 90s, after they found out about his past prior to him immigrating to Canada. Apparently, at the onset of his dementia, somewhere around 93, the old man, Klaus Wolf, began to recount his previously secret past in Nazi Germany to his family, and the grandchildren wanted nothing to do with him anymore. When what little money Klaus had left ran out, there were few options for him, and he wound up on the street. The police tell Marla that Klaus did get a job before his dementia held permanent grip as a mall Santa in 94, but by Christmas of 95, the dementia had taken over completely, and the people at the mall never saw Klaus that year. The same year, he started visiting Billy. The cops can only figure that Klaus must have picked a random house and started sneaking in. Marla's horrified by it all. And as news spreads around the city, so are many other parents horrified when their children come to them with tales of Santa Claus slipping through their window, even those with rooms on second floors like Billy, to bring them Christmas greetings from Deutschland and the Führer.
another week, another macabre tale. And don't forget, you never ever really leave the Nightmare Bazaar.